This time on the show, living well on less, learn to cook,
and comics on a floppy.
All this and more on Comics Are Great. It's Comics Are Great, the visual storytelling show recorded live every other Wednesday at the Ann Arbor District Library in lovely downtown Ann Arbor, Michigan, comics.aadl.org. And this is the show where we talk about making comics, publishing comics, writing and drawing comics, and comics lifestyle. And this is going to be an episode about comics lifestyle. I've been teasing that for far too long. We're actually going to talk about the topic today is living well on less as a cartoonist. And I am joined by a stellar roundtable of guests, both virtual and real. Let's start with the person who's beaming in via the internet, C. Spike Trotman, iron_spike on the Twitters, author of Poorcraft, funny book Fundamentals of Living Well on Less. Hi, Spike.
Hi.
Also the creator of Templar Arizona, and which we'll talk about later. We're going to talk about Smut Peddler, which are words that I'm sure nobody who ever watched the show ever expected to hear come out of my mouth. but yeah, we're going to talk about that later on.
I come prepared to talk money and smut and alternate universes. I'm ready to go.
Yeah. We're going to cover the gamut today. And so thank you for being here today, Spike.
No problem. It's really glad to be here.
And then in studio, we have Lorianne Uy. Did I get that right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Lorianne, Southern California expat.
Los Angeles, California,
now living in Michigan, in lovely Ann Arbor, Michigan, which it's especially lovely in February.
Surviving the winter.
Yeah. How's your first winter treating you?
I've become really best friends with my North Face jacket. It's like down, and it's just like my best friend every single day.
And you are Lorbits on the Twitters.
Yes, I am.
And lorbits.com is where we can find your work. And yeah, another cartoonist who lived in Ann Arbor for a while, Janie Ho of Chicken Girl. girldesign.com and Chicken Girl on the Twitters. She came from New York City. She came from someplace. Well, where did she move from? But when she came to Ann Arbor, she did a comic about her first winter here and then when she had to don the puffy coat.
Right.
Which she never had to do before. But, you know, it's like, this is natural here, right? It's no big deal.
If I had time, I'd be doing that. Exactly.
but thank you. It's great to have you in studio.
It's a pleasure to be here.
And then returning to the show, we have Dave Carter.
Hey, thanks, Jersey. So not a cartoonist, but longtime Michigan resident. I have 5 different winter coats for all the different degrees of winter weather that we have here.
Good strategy.
So yes, Dave reads comics on Twitter,
right.
And yet another comics blog, blogspot.com. And your title is?
I am, among other things, the video game archivist and comic book buyer for the University of Michigan Library.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So this is a guy you want to know, Spike.
Yeah.
You can get it.
No, this is one of the ways that we Spike and I kind of sort of virtually met is that you put out a call on Twitter saying, like you wanted more librarians to purchase your wares because they're good.
Mm-hmm.
And this show happens to be produced at a library. We have a lot of librarians on it. But you are a university librarian, so it's
right.
A different game. Like, when you go to the collection there, it's library-bound books. You actually bind the books properly.
Right, yeah. We put these flimsy comics, and we put them in hardcovers, put them on the shelf, and we plan to keep them for years and years and years. So generations of folks can look at your stuff in the future. And we'll talk more about this later.
Yeah, in the second half of the show. Yeah,
that's awesome.
But anyway, yeah. So have you been to the Duderstadt yet?
Not yet.
You gotta go check out that collection.
Definitely have to check it out.
And there's a video game collection there where you can go play video games, and then you have like every conceivable system, even the Famicom.
Yeah, we've got like 40 some different video game systems there.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
What about the Wonder Swan? Do you have that?
I do. I've got a color Wonder Swan.
Oh, wow. Bad respect.
Ding, ding, ding. Your cloud score just went up.
Yeah.
So let's get to topic for the first half of the show. We're going to talk about living well on less, managing your finances as a cartoonist. And I want to lead with the big idea, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong. And this is going to refer a lot to the book called Poorcraft, which Spike worked on with the talented Diana Nock of Jinxville.com.
Very talented Diana Nock.
Oh, she's from another planet. She's so good. Yeah,
exactly.
The intrepid
it's
girl.
Something this world's never seen before. And this is what it looks like.
So we can pull it up on camera.
Oh, sure. Yeah, right there. That's the cover, and the two people on the cover that are in black and white are the main characters. The girl with the black hair and the bandana, no relation, is Penny. And the light-haired girl, who looks kind of perplexed, is Mill. And they are kind of our guides through the world of how not to have a miserable life when you don't have a lot of money.
Because
all the people in color on the back are poor craft backers from Kickstarter who paid for a spot on the cover.
Oh, cool.
That's a good reward.
That's a good reward.
Second segment.
But that's the thing, is that, you know, there is a buck to be made in comics.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
But it's tough. I once gave advice to a former student who was in college, and they were trying to wrestle with this idea of, like, I'm not getting everything I wanted out of college. I think I'm good enough to just jump into a freelance career. And they said, you know, should I drop out? Should I stay in school? And I said, well, here are your options. And I said, if you stay in school, this, this, and this will probably happen. But if you drop out and you decide to go into freelance work and I think you're good enough, you're going to have to get a tax ID number. You have to get a doing business as license. You're going to have to start managing your taxes, paying them quarterly. There's a lot of work that goes into this. And here's the thing. There's no promises that you're actually going to make any money on this. So
Yeah. This
is why your book has been mentioned on this show a bunch of times, Spike, is that, you know, we have to brace ourselves for, you know, I make a living. A living, but my car is 13 years old.
Yeah,
it's like you don't. There's no guarantee you're gonna make a ton of money. So this,
and that bothers a lot of people. The fact that there's no guarantee, that it's not like a salaried position where you go in, you put in your 8 hours, and every 2 weeks you get a paycheck. Mm-hmm. I've had a lot of people ask me, you know, it's like how can I make it the highest level of likelihood? You know, how can I stack the deck in my favor that I will eventually make a living out of it? And you kind of need to let them down gentle, where if you're going to go this, it's like, I only know how to do things one way. I know how to do the super independent, walk my own road kind of cartooning path. I've never worked for Marvel. I've never worked for DC. I've never done freelance illustration. And I was cartooning for about 3 years before I made a dime. And that's something you need to be prepared for. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's something where I think, Dave, you can chime in on this, is it's a different world we're living in now than one, say, 30 years ago.
Yeah, I mean you have more choices.
Yeah,
that's true.
But that means you also have more routes to try and fail at.
Yeah.
I mean, it used to be if you didn't get a gig with one of the big comics publishers, your Marvels, your DCs, your Harveys, your Disneys, your whatever,
Charlton,
and you could step up from Charlton to DC or something like that. Mm-hmm. Now you can go off and put your stuff on the web and see if people like it and build a community, and then find out if people are willing to give you money for stuff you do, or if they're willing to pay for a printed version of your web comic, or if they want a T-shirt or something like that, or if they're willing to fund a Kickstarter for you to do your next big thing.
Mm-hmm.
But that means that, like I said, there's so many different paths now. It's hard to say, well, these are the steps one needs to take to become a cartoonist.
Yeah.
And in my opinion, asking people who are kind of established cartoonists who have been cartooning for 10 years is kind of like misguided, because it's the internet, you know?
Everyone has their own way, completely different
than now.
Yeah,
it was like, there are people who could be like, oh, well, how do you get started in comics? Well, you start posting on Usenet. You know, that's...
Right.
I mean, that worked 10 years ago. You need to think now. You need to think Kickstarter. You need to think cheap hosting. You need to think going to cons and passing out minis. There's always going to be some sort of tried and true methods that transcend changes in technology. But the technology plays such an important role in being an independent creator right now that you always have to be willing to try new things and go down new paths and do stuff maybe your favorite established cartoonists have never done because it wasn't around when they were at the level you're at right now.
Yeah, it's definitely a time of experimentation, you know, like you're just going to have to try and throw things at the wall and see what sticks. But I think that's actually very empowering. I mean, for someone like me that just started out and like had no idea how to do things, we just tried and tried and tried. And I think about Seth Godin. He's like a marketing guru that I just like reading his books about that. And Jason Brubaker also mentioned how it's like it's all about tribe building now and just finding the people that are interested in your work and cultivating that and building that audience. And it's not about like knocking on these gatekeepers and just trying to get into the industry that way. It's all like very kind of localized now.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
It does. And Jason Brubaker, we should give a shout out to another comics podcast. He does the Making Comics podcast where they talk about a lot of this kind of stuff too.
It's kind of like the, what is it? The thousand true fans theory artistic success, where all you need to be an artistic success by any measure is 1,000 people willing to spend $100 on you a year.
Yeah. And you know, it's a sliding scale. Like, it's not exactly 1,000 fans. Like, for you, it's probably, like, less. And, you know,
no, it's like Dave Sim said, there's 2,000 pages of crap you got to get through before you get the good stuff. And it's exactly
that's
the Derbis Guide to Making Comics. I bought that in my comic shop when I was a teenager. And my dad was a cheapskate. That's where I get it from. And every summer we would drive between 16 and 20 hours from the suburbs of D.C. down to Dothan, Alabama. And I was in the car reading the Cerebus Guide to Making Comics here. And I was like, oh, my God, this is genius. I'm going to make comics. I'm going to work for Slave Labor Graphics. But I'm going to go in at 8 and punch my card and then leave at 5 and punch my card because I'm an idiot. And I think this is how comics work because I'm a teenager.
Right.
You all had dreams.
So I want to talk about managing finances here, and I want to start with a big question. Mm-hmm. A big question, and then we'll get into the nitty-gritty of some of the stuff in Poorcraft is it can't be as simple as just eat ramen noodles, right?
No.
I mean, that's a simplistic way of looking at this thing. So I want to start with a more abstract-ish question that'll hopefully be something you can wrestle with is, you know, you talked about just a second ago, Spike, about how you had this one outlook when you were a teenager and you have a different outlook now. If you can identify what is one major way that your thinking about finances has changed since entering into the world of professional cartooning, right? Because there's no like threshold of like I am a professional.
Yeah.
It's a gray line to cross. But as you were crossing whatever threshold that was, mm-hmm. What's one significant way that your thinking changed about the way you handle money and finance, your finances?
Like I said, early on, I had the realization there was going to be no paycheck, you know, with health insurance and 401k taken out. The idea that if I had a good year or if I had a bad year, it was going to be entirely up to me. And again, this is all from the independent cartoonist perspective, you know, not working freelance, not doing illustration. And the idea that every dime I make was going to be a dime I had to work for. And I had to save and cut corners wherever I could. If I was going to do a con in Scranton or whatever, I had to find a floor to crash on. And I wasn't above crashing on the floors of fans and readers. I wasn't above crashing on the floor of people I'd met 2 or 3 times at a con. I would go to the discount. I still do go to the discount airline sites and find the absolute cheapest flight. If it meant I had to fly in at 4 a.m. and wait at the airport for 4 hours for my ride, that was fine. You know, I was just cutting as many corners, doubling up on tables, in some cases tripling up on tables. So we each got a third of a table, which wasn't a big deal back when I had like 2 or 3 books. And skipping out on the party, the after-con party, where everyone knows, anyone who's done a Comic-Con, when the hall closes down, everyone comes out from behind their tables and they go, oh, what are we doing? Are we going out for Japanese? Are we going to the bar? What are we doing? No, I don't know what you're doing. I'm going back to my hotel room to eat a cheese sandwich. So yeah. You know, that's what I did. Yeah. And I did that for years and years. And to a degree, I still do that. Every once in a while, I'm like, you know what? Screw this. I'm taking a cab. But still, I cut as many corners as I could. I made every dollar count. I made each con as profitable as I possibly could. I learned how to sell my book. I learned the whole elevator pitch thing. Describe your book in a sentence, then describe it in 3 sentences, and then describe it in a paragraph. I tried to pull in as many buyers as possible. All the money I made on Project Wonderful, the webcomic banner ad site, I never took it out of Project Wonderful. I just used it for more advertising. And all the money I got, I saved. And over a period of 7 years, I saved enough money to cover the page rates on Smut Peddler and Poorcraft. And that was kind of my plan from day one. And
so wait a second. You paid artists to work on books with you? What is this nonsense?
Whoa.
This is the 21st century of comics where we do everything on spec, I thought.
Yeah, honestly, it's kind of interesting. I get people, it's like, oh, I want to put together an anthology. And my first question is like, well, you're gonna pay the people, right? And they're like, well, I can't afford it. It's like, I understand that. I've been there. But you know, the best way to get people to actually produce the work they're going to produce pay them. You know, pay all those bills. If there's an incentive, a cash incentive, then the pages actually appear instead of everyone getting super excited, you know, in a forum talking about the awesome project they're going to do. And the project just sort of never materializes because people have other stuff they want to do. And, oh, well, you know, it doesn't pay. You should be grateful for the fact I'm even involved. You know, this is charity work. You know, it's just, no, just if you want to put together a project, if you are a writer, can't draw, and you're looking for an artist or the other way around, you deserve a page rate. The artist deserves a page rate. And that's how you, not, it sounds horrible because it sounds like I'm talking about a dog, but that's how you sort of get loyalty to the project. When someone knows a paycheck is waiting for them at the end of this page, it's just human nature. Mm-hmm. You want to make sure your project actually comes to pass, pay the people involved. The only person who isn't paid at the outset of all my projects is me. That's it.
I think that we've got a pull quote for this episode. I want to hear from Laura. What about you? How's your thinking changed since doing this? Because you got a book here.
Yeah.
Got off topic. Sorry.
No. That was definitely related.
Yeah,
for sure.
That was definitely helpful. I was writing notes. No, after I graduated, I had a full time job, but I always knew that I wanted to do a graphic novel of my own. And it was just a matter of like coming up with the idea and actually like sitting down to work on it. But while I had that full-time job, I started really thinking about finances. Well, you know, if I'm going to be writing a book, you know, how much time would I need? And would I have a job or something to help me, you know, as I'm writing the book? And so I started saving up a lot, like emergency funds and retirement funds. Like I started really researching into those and like taking it really seriously, because in case things don't go well for the company, because this was a startup, that I'd be prepared to make that leap into unemployment territory. And true enough, I got laid off because the economy was pretty bad in 2008, that's when I said, like, okay, you know, This is it. I had my buffer, and I was gonna definitely start working on the book by then. So even before I started thinking about comics like as a reality for me, I was like already thinking about finances and just the, I don't know how to say it. It's like it's my day to day reality is like the. I needed to pay my loans, student loans was a big deal. You know, rent and utilities. I had to save up for all of that. And yeah.
Okay. So what I'm hearing here, there's some common language I'm picking up on here that I want to sort of underline is, we could say, suck it up, kid. Comics is life of sacrifice. And if you don't have the guts, the 1929 chutzpah to put up with, sacrificing, then get out. Or is it sacrifice or is it prioritizing? That's the question I've got.
Prioritizing, to my mind, it's like
definitely prioritizing.
If you are the kind of person that you will say to yourself, you know what, I'm going to live in a shared house where I only have to pay $350 worth of rent a month for one room and access to the bathroom and the kitchen, and I am going to take the Greyhound bus to all the cons because it's, you know, $25 or whatever, and I'm going to split my table, and I'm going to make print-on-demand maybe 100 books because that's all I can afford now. If you're willing to start at the bottom, that's probably the best indicator of how willing you are to stick with it, because there are people I've seen who they've started a webcomic, and 6 months in, they're almost indignant. They're like, where are my thousands of fans? Where's my $5,000?
I showed up.
Oh, dear.
I showed up. Where's my money? And there, I swear, there was one person, his name escapes me, but he actually had a countdown on his site, like a, you know, this many days until, like people have for New Year's. And it was all like, I'm giving myself a year to become a professional web cartoonist. And it counted down from a year. And I'm like, are you serious?
Really?
I actually don't know one person that made it in a year you know, that started a comic and a year later they were making fat stacks. You know, I that person doesn't exist. You have to be in this for the long haul. It's a career, you know? Where this idea that somehow being a cartoonist is a get rich quick thing came from is I have no idea. It's bizarre.
So, okay, let's talk about some of the things in Portcraft, because there's a preview that's available on the website, ironcircus.com/store.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got a table of contents in there. And I'm just wondering if we can just pull from a couple of the tips that are in the book.
Absolutely.
Housing, food, fashion, health, transportation, entertainment, education, and emergencies. You've got all these bases covered in this book for the person. Now that we scared, you know, all these prospective cartoonists of how hard it is and how much. Now we can offer some actual, like, useful, like, what are some of the things that we'll find in this book and why people should get it?
Well, a lot of it is focused on urban and suburban frugal living. I can't speak for rural frugal living because I've never experienced it. But I grew up in the suburbs of Washington, D.C., and they were unwalkable. I was maybe 4 miles from the closest bus stop, which would then take you to the subway, and then the subway would take you to the city. It was for people that were content with 40-mile trips one way to work and then 40 miles home every day. Oh, it was the quintessential unsustainable suburb. And when I moved to the city, I was shocked by how easily I could get to everything. I don't even own a bike because where I live right now, I walk everywhere. I walk to the dentist. I walk to the doctor. I walk to the vet. I walk to the grocery store. I walk to the movie theater. Everything is completely walkable. And of course, that saves me like a ton of money. Mm-hmm. And I think location is probably the most important thing and just if you're going to try and live as frugally as possible, just making sure you live in a place where you're not even, if you can help it, dropping $2.50 on a subway ticket one way every day. And okay. I'm not sure if that covered it. But.
Well, no. I would throw in, I mean, as a guy who grew up in a rural area, mm-hmm. Housing is dirt cheap in rural areas.
Oh, it is.
So, but the penalty you pay is, transportation is a huge problem because where I grew up.
You need a truck, yeah.
You really do. I mean, and getting to the airport to go to a convention, forget about it. You know, you're going to have to drive 3 hours.
I have my choice of airports where I live. Over there is Midway, over there is O'Hare. Mm-hmm. So.
I will say for any cartoonists who are looking for a place to live, though, Ann Arbor does have fairly affordable outlying areas, and we got a great public transportation system. So,
There's this.
We have a good public transportation system for Michigan.
Yeah. Okay.
Let's be clear on that.
All right. There's this idea people have that they need to move someplace to make their career happen. And every once in a while you'll hear about someone, I'm going to move to LA. I'm going to move to New York. And it's like, well, that's great. But have you taken a look at the rents in LA and New York?
Yes.
And there's no way you're going to find a place you can live when you're on the very first rung of cartoonist ladder. You know, I have friends who are living in Minneapolis right now, and they're renting part of a house, like a house, for $400. But there are people who want to move to New York, and they want to rent their own place, a studio, for $1,200.
Like, right.
That's, like, no.
Yeah, that's not going
to
happen.
Not poor
I'm
crap.
Pretty
that's
happy to crap. Leave LA.
You don't need to be anywhere, if you know, these days. If you want to make a webcomic or, you know, be part of the webcomic community, although in my opinion it's so diverse and fragmented now, there are so many different little communities, but
what about food though? I mean, because you know, I made that ramen noodles if we could pull one tip out of there, because like I was thinking about it, like there's the ramen noodles joke, and then there's that Simpsons joke with discarded pizza boxes are a good source of cheese. but beyond that, I mean, like what's like one great tip that you learn to cook?
Learn to cook. That's the one thing. People are like, oh, no, but ramen noodles are super cheap. It's like, no. I guess if that's what you want to eat for 3 meals a day, you could argue that ramen noodles at 15 cents, if you don't put anything in them, are super cheap. But is that something you should really be doing? Probably not, because you'll end up all like malnutrition. But no, just serious. I'm not saying that everyone should go to the local co-op and buy organic free trade quinoa or anything. I'm just saying go to your local supermarket and get fresh ingredients or frozen ingredients or whatever's on sale, because a lot of the name brand stuff goes on insane sales. And just take that home and learn to make it into food. Learn to make it into, you know, tomato sauce or, you know, fried rice. Fried rice is the easiest. I think recipes for fried rice are actually kind of bizarre, because all it is what's in the fridge? Okay, mixing it with rice. And it's delicious, and it's completely simple, and anyone can learn to make rice. And if you have vegetables and rice in the fridge, congratulations, you have food.
That's a meal. And
there are so many people who don't know how to roast a chicken. It's like cookery 101. It's one of the most basic things on earth you can learn. Go to the supermarket, find the chickens that are on sale. They're $1 a pound. Take them home, prepare them, roast them. Congratulations, you can now eat for a week. Are you sure you want ramen? I would. So learn to cook. That's my one piece of advice when it comes to food. Just learn to cook.
Do you cook, Laura?
Because I have a boyfriend who loves cooking.
or hook up with somebody who likes to cook.
That's a good strategy, guys. Ever since we went semi-vegan, it's been cheaper for us too. We've just we're Filipinos and love our rice. We have rice all the time, and just grab vegetables, saute them. It's really simple, but it's been nutritious and lost a few pounds since then. It's totally doable.
Yeah, and you just get a simple cookbook like Vegan with a Vengeance by Moskovitz or something like that. And there's like a million like go-to 20-minute recipes in there. So yeah, learning to cook, and then as a stay-at-home husband who does the shopping, you learn to watch the circulars. You know, you get them in the mail, and then it's like, oh, you know, 5 for $5 at Kroger this week. You know, half gallons of almond milk or whatever.
There's
right?
No shame in coupons.
When I was in college, actually, I had a friend whose boyfriend figured out that simply by virtue of being in college, he was eligible for food stamps. And he immediately went out and got food stamps. And he would just go to the frou-frou normal grocery that's like downtown where all the yuppies shop. And he would just be all like, oh, how much is that? $400? Let me get out my food stamp. One food stamp, two food stamp. And people would be like, and he's like, whatever, free food. You can turn it down. I won't.
So moving to a little bit more on the ground kind of stuff. I'm curious. This is a pain point for me as a guy who tries to manage his finances. Well, my wife does. Thank God she helps me with this and does most of it for me because I'm. Yeah. Anyway, what software or system do you guys recommend for managing your money? And there's clapping going on.
Excited.
I've tried Mint.com. I've tried my banking software. I tried Quicken, Simple Spreadsheets, and it's all a pain in the tuchus. So what do you do, Spike?
What I have right now is if you guys go to outright.com, O-U-T-R-I-G-H-T, outright.com, you sign in, you make an account, and then it asks you for the account numbers at your bank. It asks you for the account numbers of your credit card. It asks you for your PayPal account. And that right there is maybe 90% of the business I do. And it will automatically keep track of all your expenses and all your income and categorize them for you. It could get your categories wrong, but then you go in and you tell it, no, when money comes from Amazon, it counts as merchandise sales. And from now on, count all money from Amazon as merchandise sales. And it'll remember. It just keeps everything nice and clean for you. It shows you your net and gross income for the year. At the end of the year, it compiles the tax documents for you. If you're using the paid version, it's fantastic. And I love it.
Outright.com. I've not
Outright.com. You won't be sorry.
Okay. This segment brought to you by.
Yeah.
What do you use, Laura?
I actually use Mint.com for my personal stuff and Outright for my on my business side because I have different credit cards so that I can separate that out. And I also have something I just found out recently, tuition.io. Showcases my loans so that you could tell, you could experiment. There's a sliding scale. You could experiment if I paid like $75 more, you know, you could be paying this off like 6 months earlier. So that's something I just found out.
To
and
manage
I'm
your
so
student
excited
loans.
To yeah. see it visually presented that way. And between those couple of things, and I have a good view of my finances. Like I'm a visual learner and just a visual person in general. So it's really helpful to see a lot of charts and, okay, I need to be making that thing rise instead of like go down. Yeah. So, yeah.
Now, Dave, you are a wealthy librarian.
Let us point out that I'm the income scale, librarians are only maybe slightly above cartoonists.
Cha-ching.
But what do you use?
I don't.
Okay.
I just keep everything in a pile.
I live alone and I have one income source.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So I look at my bank statement every month and make sure that the money was going where I thought it was going and okay. it's coming mm-hmm. in where I thought it was coming in at. Yeah. And, you know, look at my quarterly 403B thing from TIA Cref and see if it's grown or shrunk and how soon can I retire, those sorts of things. But, yeah, I'm not a good person to go to
for financial advice.
but it does bring up a point about retirement planning.
Yes, I was good. That was where I wanted to go with that, is what do you guys do about retirement?
Well, I started 401k when I was still with my full-time job, and then once that went away, I basically moved it to a Vanguard index fund. I've just been steadily socking a little bit of money away over there, and just I think that one of the best strategies for saving up actually is to automate everything. It's just like have it go and you don't have to think about it.
Have it just deducted from your bank account
withdrawn every month, and it just so yeah. you already know, you're already planning for it to be part of your, you know, like your monthly budget.
So, mm-hmm. So you guys budget?
Yeah, definitely.
Extensively. Definitely budget. And for savings plans, like I said, for the first 2 or 3 years when I was cartooning, nothing. I made nothing. And my husband had the day job, and I'll never forget it. He would tell me that, you know, you don't have to ever make anything. I think your cartoons are wonderful and the world needs them. And if you never make a dime ever again, you know, da 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 da, you can do whatever you want. You don't have to make money, which was cute, but I have to get paid. So that was always part of the plan.
My boyfriend is not so kind. He's like, make money.
He had a very, you know, for a while there, he was working at sort of a event planning place. He did their graphic design, and now he works for JPMorgan Chase. And we're actually working on getting him out of that job so he can come work for me. He has a 401k, and he has been, you know, moving it with him from job to job. And so the place he works now, they actually do dollar for dollar matching up to a certain point.
Good.
So he just has it automatically withdrawn up to that point. Mm-hmm. And then the dollar for dollar matching happens. And that's our primary retirement planning right now. But hopefully, if things continue to go as well for me as they have been going since the middle of 2012, I'd like to start a Roth IRA because only a few months ago, I had the difference between a traditional and a Roth IRA explained to me. And basically, with the traditional IRA, you pay taxes when you put the money into the individual retirement account. But when you withdraw it at retirement age, it's tax-free. It's the other way around.
I think it's the other way around.
No taxes now, taxes when you withdraw with a traditional
IRA.
And with a Roth IRA, you pay taxes when you put it in now, but when you're 65 and you start drawing on the account, it's tax-free. And the way it was explained to me, taxes are at a historic low, so you might as well pay them now. And there's a $5,000 a year limit for Roth IRAs, and I would like to do that. Until I'm maybe 65, and see how that goes.
So, how often do you guys check in with your budgets?
Constantly.
Every day.
Every day, I check and see income. I check and see expenses. I check and see what's in the bank. Primarily, I lost my wallet a few months ago, so that kind of started me making sure there weren't any weird charges, and I kind of kept in the habit. And I'm the one who's in charge of paying the bills. So when the bills come in, I make sure there are no weird charges on them. I'm completely about the finances.
So things like Outright.com or Mint.com help with that. Like,
Outright is fantastic, seriously.
Is it?
And it's free, so you got like nothing to lose. So you should try it out.
I will, because one of the things that I got frustrated about with Mint is that it constantly reassigned categories to incoming items, even if I said, no, if it comes from that address, that's groceries. That's Kroger. I told you it's Kroger. And then it's like, are you sure this isn't gasoline and auto expenses? No. So... If Outright can actually learn that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've never had that problem with Outright. Mm-hmm. When you tell it, you know, this belongs in category C, it stays in category C.
Mm. That's exciting. So we're getting lots of chiming in. Wow, the chat is really active today. And I got to think it's because we have a really good roundtable and lots of folks turned up for it. And folks are chiming in saying, yes, automation is a big, big deal, like automating those bills. What about paying your quarterly taxes? Is that automated or is that something where you guys are checking in?
My situation is kind of weird. Outright does its best, truly it does, to understand my situation, but it never will, which is like the way the Kickstarters go and the way my income goes. You know, this month I'll make this piddling amount. Holy crap. Holy crap. And it doesn't know what to do. So it's like on Monday, it'll say your quarterly tax estimate is $583. And then your quarterly tax estimate is now somehow $16,000.
Yeah.
So it tries, but I don't have regular income.
At the end of the day, I just
pay the penalty at the end of the year for now.
Okay. Yeah. And I mean, that's one of the things that I've struggled with probably the most is it fluctuates year to year. One year I have an awesome year, then for the next year it's terrible, you know? Mm-hmm. And then it's like, well, on the terrible year, am I going to pay the estimated taxes that I paid last year? Right? Because that's what they tell you to do. It's like, well, just estimate on what you did last year. Well, last year I had an awesome year and this first quarter sucked. So, you know, so that's one of the trickier parts to manage, I think. And it's not like in comics, you can't schedule out your year like, well, in July, I'm going to be making this much, right? Mm-hmm. It's not like the work for hire thing where, like, I do freelance. Do you guys do freelance work too?
Very rarely. I have to be super into the job. I recently did an Adventure Time cover for the April issue, and that was because I like Adventure Time. But for the most part, no.
Okay, but yeah, like with when you're doing work for hire freelance stuff, you can sometimes schedule that out. Like, okay, well, I got a gig coming in this summer that I can count on. But otherwise, yeah, that one is tricky. Mm-hmm. Scott Yoshinaga of Nemu-Nemu.com is in the chat. Mm-hmm. He's suggesting if you're on iOS, there's a receipt tracking application called OneReceipt. I've been thinking about this too, like either using Evernote or an app like OneReceipt to actually like scan my receipts, because if I put them in my wallet and they stay there for too long with that stupid, what is that kind of ink called? It's not even ink. It's like it's sort of like scratched into the receipt. It wears off. Yeah, the heat transferred receipts or whatever. Is that what you're saying, Matt?
You just got a blank piece of paper.
Yeah. You got a blank piece of paper, right?
What was this?
Do you guys track all your receipts when you're doing conventions and traveling and expenses?
I do. I write off the taxi I took. But since I have Outright, I try to pay for as many things as possible with a credit card, because that way it's automatically tracked for me. And for a while, you know, I was told many, many times, like, oh, no, the IRS does not accept electronic stuff. You have to keep the receipt. And then if you go to the IRS website, the IRS is like, no. They're fine.
It actually has a MIDI file that plays that for you.
I keep track of receipts, but I don't do it with great, you know, I'm not very organized about it. What I have is a grocery bag, like a plastic produce bag with the year on it, and the receipts go in there.
Okay.
And, you know, if I need a receipt, it's 10 times easier to look it up online than it is, because it's all in my credit card statement. My credit card statement goes back a billion years. And how was this a business dinner? Let's see. Yes, it happened on the weekend of this con, so business dinner.
Yeah. Okay. I just have those like little organizers with the months on them, and you start placing receipts over there. And like once a month, I'll be going over them and either putting them in my little Excel sheet or just making sure that I have them either on my Outright or just reflected somewhere else.
So that there's a case for paying for everything with plastic that makes it more trackable in the long run for you as a cartoon.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So, okay, well, now I want to close out with talking about managing sales. And Laura, you in particular, I would imagine you have a challenge on your hands, because you got your book, Poltergeist, everywhere. It's on iBooks. It's on, or I mean, the what is it? The Apple Bookstore, iBookstore, Amazon. Oh gosh, where else is it?
Store Envy, my Store Envy, personal Gumroad. Website, but Gumroad.
Gumroad's
pretty awesome.
Gumroad, yes.
Yeah.
Gumroad is pretty sweet.
Yeah.
I'm in love with Gumroad, actually.
And,
I send it little notes and stuff.
I just put one of my books on Gumroad, and I was really pleasantly surprised with the uptake on it. And I did like
free money, basically.
Yeah, the pay what you want model, right? I just said, here's my 200-something page graphic novel, pay whatever you want for it, even zero, and lots of zero downloads. But then, like, some people were paying like double what I expected to get, you know, that is really cool. Then that we go into the whole thing about Ryan Estrada and his whole story project with this whole like
Ryan is a good dude. I love Ryan.
Oh, Ryan
is the author of the Porkcraft sequel, by the way.
Oh, well, who better as the world traveler who is
exactly and who's most equipped, you know?
And he posts his finances openly online. I don't know if you guys saw that post he did where he was showing like, here's how I made my money this year, and this is where all my income streams came from. Super open and generous with his knowledge. So I am looking forward to that. Yeah, Ryan is the best. Mm-hmm. I call him my Obi-Wan Kenobi ghost. Whenever I have trouble, I just turn to my Ryan Estrada ghost who says, no, this is what you need to do, pal. I'm like, oh, thanks. but I'm wondering, you know, pros and cons of these different fulfillment. Because you use OpenCart, Spike, right?
Yes, I think I do. I do. I use OpenCart. It's that open source shopping cart thing I've got going on. I use OpenCart to sell on my site. I use Gumroad to sell PDFs because I didn't want to just stick a PDF up on the site with a link that one person can buy and then copy paste the link and go like, hey, everybody, who wants free porn? And so Gumroad, OpenCart. I also sell on Amazon, which has been surprisingly good. And I'm getting set up with Comixology right now. After letting it just sort of lie there for way too long, selling only Porkcraft and completely ignoring Porkcraft.
Oh, we're getting some latency. We're getting some bit crushing. Hey, Spike?
Sorry, hold on.
Okay, sorry. Skype is just saying like, oh, hey, I'm having trouble processing all of this awesome
stuff. Am I still
here? Yes, you're here. Okay. There we are.
Yeah, multiple income streams. That's definitely important.
So, okay, but this has got to require a lot of work on your part, first of all. When we talk about, like, managing priorities.
You have to have an entrepreneurial spirit. If you're the kind of person, this isn't meant to sound cruel, by the way. If you're the kind of person who comes up to a con and they go, I've had this happen. I want to be sitting where you're sitting one day. How did you get there? And you interrupt me halfway through my spiel and you go, but I just want to draw. Well, that's fine, but then you don't want to do what I do because, like, these days, I'd say 40% of my day has nothing to do with cartooning. You want to work for somebody who hands you work, and then you draw it, and then you hand it in, and they hand you money. That's what you want to do. Me, I do my own accounting. I organize my own travel. I organize my own appearances, my speaking gigs. I do that. Everything is completely me, sole proprietorship, and you just have to wear many different hats if you want to be out there on your own completely alone.
We're coming up to book recommendation segment, and I know that was a hard segue, but I want to be respectful of Lorianne's time because I know you got to go pretty soon here. So do you want to do your book recommendations?
Yeah,
and then
sure.
And then you can bolt, Lorianne. But I want to say, so this is where we can say something about your work.
Okay.
If you enjoyed what Lorianne talked about today and what she contributed to the conversation, you do this little book called Poltergeist.
Yay.
Which is a story about a young college gal.
Young,
and five
nerdy college girl who ends up moving into a house that's filled with ghost guys. So,
are they hot?
Yes.
Thanks, Dave.
They're hot. We have... And since she's the only one that can see them, she has to help them resolve their unfinished business. So, and it's their little adventures there. And this is the first book out of a series.
And you're working on the second book now.
I'm working on the second book now, along with the little PDF of extra material, because I ran out of time when I was creating this book to finish up the extra. So I'm finishing that up for my Kickstarter backers. And just for anyone who's interested in like how I made that first book happen, the Zarek grant, the Kickstarter, extra material like the house in Berkeley that I actually researched for the book, and just just stuff that you want want more of.
It's a very, very pretty and very fun and sometimes haunting book.
I see what you did there.
I believe it or not, everybody, I actually wasn't trying for a thing. That was terrible. I meant that there were parts that were emotionally arresting in the story. I'll see you guys on CBS later on today. But I'll be sitting next to Matt Lauer making bad jokes. But anyway, no, it's really, really nicely done, and that's at laurabetz.com, is what we should say. So, okay, so now we'll recommend some other books that you enjoy that may have informed Poltergeist.
Not quite informed, but just some stuff that I've been enjoying recently. We've got, let's see, can you see that?
You get it in the shot?
Bakuman, which has had some, like, a reputation for being, like, kind of misogynistic, and yes, I acknowledge that there are some elements of it that are quite, but I've been really enjoying the past few volumes because it's about manga artists and their struggle to, like, connect with their audience and to especially the manga artist industry in Japan. It's very, very competitive, very, very high stakes. You know, if you slip down your ratings from week to week, it spells, like, the end for you, you know, in your career. And it's all just exciting, like, the comics industry hyped up so much because, like, you know, they care so much about comics. And it's just a really fun world to be in. Meanwhile, we have, like, Oku. I'm trying to show you that.
There's a preview right up there.
And this one just speaks to my Japanese art history nerd in me, because I took Japanese art history in Berkeley, and it's just, like, gender politics in feudal Japan. Ooh. Because you get, like, a Why the Last Man kind of scenario where, like, over half of the male population dies out, and so, like, women start slowly taking over authority figures, and even the shogun's female. So spoiler alert, but it just rocks, and I haven't read a manga that's just, like, made my jaw drop, like, every volume. So it's just some exciting stuff I've been reading.
And for the local folks, these are both in the library's collection.
Yes, I grabbed these from the library.
That's awesome.
Which is another way to save money when you're a cartoonist.
Actually, there we go.
Exactly, guys.
Warcraft, it tells you to go to the library.
Does it? Really? Awesome. Yeah, either if you go to the Ann Arbor District Library or to the Duderstadt, the Dude, as they say, where there's even more comics. So, wow, thank you, Laura, for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me, guys.
You're LoreBits on Twitter, and
LoreBits.com is my main website.
Everybody should go follow LoreBits on Twitter today, and we'll definitely have to have you back while you're here in Ann Arbor.
Thank you.
So, yes, thanks again. We'll let you go, and we'll talk with Dave and Spike while Sharon Iverson comes in. That's right, everybody. Sharon Iverson is in the building, Woo-hoo! And she's coming on to the show in just a minute. Everybody's waiting with bated breath. So, see you, Laura. And,
hi,
so,
Laura. Nice meeting you.
She says it's nice meeting you. She took her headphones off.
She says when her headphones are all the way off.
Okay, see ya. So, Spike, I want to talk about your work a little bit just for a second.
Can I recommend my comics, too?
Oh, sure.
I want to recommend comics that are not by me first before we get into it.
Okay.
Just because I feel like it. And I'm kind of really excited about some of these.
Please.
I don't even know why I'm recommending this, because you're not going to find it. But this is a comic from ages ago.
Oh, it's yay. That's
Loot. Those Annoying Post Brothers. And it is about two guys from a town called Bugtown. And Bugtown's best description is, it's anywhere it wants to be. It is a town that can dimensionally shift, and so can all the inhabitants of Bugtown. And those Annoying Post Brothers live in Bugtown. And it's by Matt Haworth and Lou Stathis. And this is one of the comics that I had in mind when I was doing my own comics about a weird town full of weird, horrible people. And again, it's the series is Those Annoying Post Brothers, and this particular volume is Das Loot.
Yes, and I believe the early issues are on Comixology now, if you can't.
Ooh, cool. Yeah. I didn't know that. Yeah, so check out Matt Haworth. He's really weird and interesting and completely different. He's kind of from the old school of alternative comics. It's good stuff.
He was doing digital comics back when he was mailing you your comics on a 3.5-inch floppy. So he's an early pioneer in digital.
This is something else I'm not entirely sure you'll be able to find, but this is Pug Davis by Rebecca Sugar, who, if you're a nerd, you might recognize as the creator of Steven Universe, the new Cartoon Network series that's coming up soon. She also worked a lot on Adventure Time. And this was her webcomic about an astronaut who used to be a janitor at NASA, and he got caught in a horrible explosion. And for some reason, when they put him back together, they gave him the head of a dog. So now he lives in space with his little sidekick, the Blouse. And the Blouse is in space because NASA wanted to test zero gravity's effects on homosexuality. And then they just left him out there because he's the kind of guy people bully a lot. And so he kind of turns to Pug for a lot of protection, and he kind of has a crush on Pug. But Pug is a very unenlightened, blue-collar kind of dude who simultaneously wants to protect the Blouse because the Blouse is just a punching bag for the universe and like doesn't want to encourage these affections. But it's excellent, and if you can find it anywhere, grab it. And one more thing.
Okay.
That's not mine. This is The Less Than Epic Adventures of TJ and Amal. It is another webcomic, and it is by E.K. Weaver. You can probably get them direct from her. This is just volume one of three. And it is a love story between these two guys that's also about a cross-country road trip. Amal, who is the little dude with white forelock, just came out to his family that did not take it well. And TJ just has issues, and it's a really good book. Anyway, it's a buddy
road trip story and a romance at the same time.
Cool. I guess you could put it in the, you know, yaoi category, but when I think yaoi, I do not think of stuff this excellent and deep. Maybe I'm just reading bad yaoi.
I also noticed the subtitle had poor boys in it. Does that fit the theme of today's talk?
It might. Poor boys and pilgrims. Oh, so there's Sharon Iverson, everybody, who are just listening in the audio.
Segway.
Sharon Iverson of the Ann Arbor District Library, comics.aedl.org. Thank you for being here again, Sharon.
Sure.
So I guess we could just go on full on into book recommendations, and we'll close out with Spike stuff because you got some exciting stuff going on. So what do you got for us, Sharon?
Well, I see that Poltergeist was already mentioned, so I went ahead and I brought it just in case there was going to be no discussion or showing of Poltergeist. I also brought volume three, which I think has been out a little while, of Gunnar Krig Court. And it's
a thumbs up from Spike.
Yeah, it is such an adventure. I mean, this one has anything from robots to, oh, and I just took my bookmark out. The colors, of course, the whole work is fascinating. But it's, you know, it's got coyote, wolf. I mean, it just is such an amazing blend of, you know, storyline of, you know, what's going on with the characters. It's, of course, a school. Gunnar Krig Court is a residential school for kids to develop into mediums. And Antimony Carver is the lead character in it. And she is a little bit like Harry Potter in that her mother has passed away. Her father's just pretty much dumped her at the school, and here she is. So she's having to kind of find her way and find her powers and so forth. And it's just, I just loved from the simulation that starts off the book through the backstory of the robot and who is this Miss Jean that nobody in the current day Gunnar Krig Court seems to know about except Antimony and her friend Kat, to all sorts of other things. So anyway, I just...
Cool.
Whenever I can get, and I had to wait a while for this one.
Now, this started out as a webcomic.
Yeah. And then I don't know, is it winter time and I get stuck on war stuff? I blogged this on the comics.aadl.org, and this is volume one of Charlie's War, the one volume that we do have in our library collection, but I have Michigan e-libraried, which means I've borrowed outside of the system two other volumes because it's a compelling story about a World War I 16-year-old Charlie Bourne who enters into the British Army just in time for the Battle of Somme And the Battle of Somme will see on its first day a casualty list of 60,000. It's brilliantly done by Pat Mills, and I do not know how to say Joe Colquhoun, who does the artwork. And this is all in black and white. It's very detailed. There are battles, of course, in the trenches, out in no man's land.
I would call this Eisner-esque. What do you say, Dave?
Yeah.
In terms of art style. For those who are listening in the audio.
Or more the EC.
Yeah, EC era.
EC era war comics.
I mean,
That's quite a compliment.
And these were like, I guess, four-page comics that came through a magazine of its time. So every so many pages, you get a recap, and then you move forward with the story. So this is a compilation. I don't know if there's like five volumes altogether, but it's so amazing, and the effort to get the history and the, you know, the art right is just incredible. I went on to watch an Australian film done about the Beneath Hill 60, where the Australians attempt to set off a series of mines, which at that time would be the largest explosion. It was in Belgium, but felt in London.
Wow.
And again, it takes you down into that trench warfare, and you just can't imagine what the conditions were like. But the artwork and the storyline and the characters just draw you into the trenches with them. So it's fabulous.
Here's your influence at work. Argets in the chat is saying, we've been tutoring the neighborhood kid, and he's just starting World War I in history class. I might pick this up for him. If you're in Ann Arbor, then it's in the Ann Arbor District Library collection.
Yeah.
Hi, Argets.
So, Dave?
So, I didn't bring any recommendations with me.
Okay.
But
we could talk about the library, where that's one big fat recommendation, right?
Why don't we do that.
Yes, please.
The reason I came here today. Yeah. So longtime listeners of the show may remember last year when we talked about Mini Comics Day at the Duderstadt Center, and we did a whole session after it. Myself and one of the participants talked about what we did there and talked about the mini comics. And we're doing it again this year. It'll be Saturday, March 16th at the Duderstadt Center on North Campus here in Ann Arbor.
I love mini comics.
From 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. And the goal is to get a bunch of people in the same room creating comics. The stated goal is to create an 8-page mini comic in 8 hours. So it's kind of like a mini version of 24-hour comics day. It won't kill you.
Or it might.
And then, we want to get cartoonists in the area together to socialize and create all at the same time. So there will be students from the University of Michigan and other cartoonists from the area who
like me
showing up, and people like me who do 1 8-page comic a year at Mini Comics Day in my wonderful stick figure fashion for that.
Phoebe Glockner often comes to this thing.
Phoebe and her, she's bringing her class, her comics creating class, School of Art and Design. They'll be coming in to do that. So it'll be a great opportunity. And then our secret agenda is that we ask you to give a copy of your mini comics to us for the mini comics collection that we have at the University Library. We started this collection three, four years ago, I think. One of my grad students, Stephanie Grimm, started as her graduate project.
I met her at SPX. She used to go to SPX on mini comics finding missions.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And cool. So now we get these unique mini comics and they were created nowhere else. We then add them to the library's collection. We catalog them. We put them in the catalog. We put them in a acid-free envelope
and
store them for eternity.
You have a really impressive collection of Chick Tracks.
Yeah.
I love those.
They are so great. And he's got a ton of them, like every single one almost.
Yeah, we got actually Phoebe donated it to us. This gorgeous looking box, and it's full of all these little Chick Tracks that were in it. And so those are all available to folks. And it's one of the things we try to do with the collection at the library is not just collect the popular stuff that's out there that people are reading, but we want to get a sense of what was going on down in the trenches and stuff that people are doing and try to get those rare things. Mm-hmm. So that, 20, 30 years from now, when people are trying to look back at your career, We've got a copy of that first little mini comic that you created when you were a student.
What a horrifying thought.
That's Dave's job. He's kind of like that episode of Twilight Zone where Mr. French was the devil.
Yeah, this SPX, or rather last SPX, somebody showed up with... I mean, these mini comics were so old, I submitted them to Fact Sheet 5, and like 90% of people have no idea what that is.
Fact Sheet 5, that's going back.
He showed up with them and made me sign them, and I was not cringing the entire time, because these are literally high school. I'm 34, and he shows up with comics I made when I was 14. I wanted to die inside.
Embrace your history.
Yeah, that's right. You own it. So I think, what was the first reference you made to this episode, which was like to like... some old web serving technology. I forget which one you referred to.
Whether it was Usernet.
Use that. Usernet. And then you referred to Fact Sheet 5. Man, deep cuts into comics history today.
So I should mention for people who want to participate in Mini Comics Day,
yes,
you can go to lib.umich.edu/minicomicsday.
Yep.
That will have all the information about this year's event and a form. Click, fill out the form. To let us know that you're coming. You don't have to fill out the form to show up, but it'd be nice if I had some idea of how many people to buy chips for.
Yeah, because there are refreshments. That's a nice thing that you do for everybody.
We'll have
free food. That's pork rock.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
free food while you're drawing your comics.
Exactly.
And that's March 16th from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m.
Yep, that's a Saturday.
And we did an episode, a wrap-up from last year, which I'll link in the show notes for this episode. But I got to say, you know, something I talked about when we had that discussion is whenever I do a creative project, there is that I conquer that first third of it, and then the dread sets in of, oh, my God, I'm a hack. I'm no good. Every project. It happens every time. This is garbage. I don't have any faith in this. When I finish this, everybody's going to see me for the fraud I am. And then you get past it. And then you push through and you get past it. And then you go, hey, this isn't so bad. It looks like a thing. And it was really cool in that environment with all those other people that when that moment hit, I got to express it. And then everybody else was like, yeah, I'm there too, man. or there's somebody saying, like, no, don't worry. Just keep punching. You'll get through. But you have that camaraderie.
No, Jersey, that's really good.
Pet me on the head. But anyway, you got that commiseration. You have that camaraderie in this kind of... Everybody's in this dire struggle for completing a mini comic together. And it was really fun.
And I think a lot of cartoonists kind of feel like they're working alone. You know, they're home at their drafting board or whatever, or sitting at their computer, and they're not having that interaction. And this is a chance to get out and create comics kind of sort of communally. So
that's at, lib.umich.edu/minicomicsday. We'll link to it in the show notes. So thank you, Dave. And then you are at Dave Reads Comics on Twitter. So people can get updates about it from there, right?
Oh, yes. I'll be tweeting about it nonstop between now and then.
Okay. So now, Spike, you got this thing called Smut Peddler, which we got to talk about.
As a matter of fact, Jersey, I do.
This is now the blue portion of the show.
This is where it gets blue. Don Rickles is here.
Oh, look.
So thick. Anyway, this Smut Peddler. It was on Kickstarter. This is what I saved up pretty much every dime for, even though I didn't know it when I was first starting to save. This is based on a series of mini comics that were published in the early 90s, appropriately enough, by Saucy Goose Press. And if you look very carefully, you can see the little homage to Saucy Goose at the top of the Smut Peddler.
Can you lower it just a little bit?
The little goose. And it was published by Joanna Draper Carlson and Trisha L. Sebastian. And what it was pretty much all the alternative comics people who were super hot at the time, and many who still are, made adult stories. Adult stories they wanted to make, the sexy stories they wanted to make. And they put out 3 issues of this. And they were digest minis. So, you know, you take an 8.5, 11 sheet of paper, fold it in half. That's what a digest mini size is. And there were 3 of them, like I said. And then there weren't any. And I would find the people who were in Smut Peddler at cons and harass them and be like, when's there going to be more Smut Peddler? When's there going to be more Smut Peddler? And then one day, Carlos McNeil, who was a participant in Smut Peddler and still is, said, you do it. And I was like, haha, that's funny. And then I went home and I tweeted while thinking out loud to myself, and they say Twitter is useless. I tweeted and I said, I wonder if Carlo was for real. And Carl's like, yes. And then all the editors pretty much said, yeah, you know, if you want to do this, we would not have a problem with it, and we would like to be involved. And that's where Smut Peddler came from. It's basically me emailing people, my husband as well, and we sat down. It's like, who do we want to see draw porn? Made a list, and we emailed those people, and a lot of them responded. They got a page rate, and they got a bonus, and they got comp copies. So, you know, I run a fair game. And when this was put on Kickstarter, the goal was $20,000 to cover printing costs.
And you cleared 80.
It ended up doing $83,000.
Not bad.
At the time it closed out, it was the 9th successful comic book Kickstarter. So I'm very proud of that. And I'd open it up and show you the interior, but, you know.
This is
you'll have to take my word for it.
This is a safe for work show.
And the stories are very fun and sexy. And I would like to do one of these every 2 years. And it was a great project. It endowed me via Kickstarter with a life-changing amount of money. And it produced something I am super, super, super proud of. And you can get that on Amazon. You can get it at ironcircus.com. You can get a PDF on Gumroad. It is available many ways. And that is my latest Kickstarter project.
So we will have to see about getting that added to the adult collection at the Ann Arbor District Library. And then also Poorcraft is available at the Ann Arbor District Library if you're in the area. And it is available. You offer this the same way, right? You can get the book or you can get a PDF.
Book, PDF. It's going to be on Comixology soon. It's on Amazon right now. It's on ironcircus.com right now. It's on gumroad.now. It's actually linked to in the Gumroad FAQ, believe it or not. When you go to Gumroad and you say, what is Gumroad? They provide a direct link to Poorcraft.
Cool.
This is kind of the book I wish someone had gotten me when I was 16, 17, 18.
This is the 21st
century. Kickstarter book.
This is the 21st century's Oh, the Places You'll Go.
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, man.
That's been quoted multiple times.
All the things you won't be able to afford.
And Ryan Estrada put it on the back. And
that might be where I got it.
And I wrote it. I didn't draw it. Diana Nock drew it there, and she might be in chat. So hey, and
she's here.
Yeah, it was I heard of Kickstarter from another cartoonist named Gordon McAlpin, and we were on stage at I think it was Windy City Con, and we were doing a panel, and he just casually mentioned this thing in 2009 called Kickstarter, and I was like, "What's that?" He explained it, and there was a beat, and I went, "Cool." And I immediately went home and began planning this project. And in 2009, it made $13,000 on Kickstarter after asking for $6,000. And, you know, $13,000 was like a mind-blowing amount of money on Kickstarter back then. And 2 years in the making, and it was published to sparkling reviews. It's got some quotes on the back from cartoonists I respect, so hooray for that. And it is a mere $10 for a hard copy and $5 for a PDF because it seems dumb charging more than that for a book on how to be poor.
Right.
Yeah. It's a great book. I'm super proud of it the same way I'm super proud of Smut Peddler. I'm giving away copies to women's shelters in the Chicago area. So if you know a worthy shelter that might be interested in putting these in what are called starting over kits, I'd love to hear about it. I'd love to send them a few copies, see what they think.
Cool.
And it's a great book, great gift, great to learn stuff from. I love it.
So I want to also say that if you enjoyed any of the discussion that we had today, people who are listening to this after the fact or watching the show, there's more in the book. And I would also throw on, you know, I was coloring this whole conversation as being pertaining to cartoonists, but as you just pointed out, Poorcraft, I think, would apply to anybody who's trying to rip one on less.
Same with Smut Peddler. Also, this is the latest volume of my webcomic, my sad, neglected webcomic, which is finally updating again, called Templar Arizona. It's an alternate history comic, and it has recently gone full color. So if you're interested in full color comics about unfortunate people living in terrible places, check it out at TemplarAZ.com.
TemplarAZ.com. And it is looking lovely, Spike.
Oh, thank you.
Going from Smut Peddler to another Kickstarter, I see you got on your iPad there. I think we should give a shout out to this Kickstarter.
Yes.
It just started called Yeah Comics.
They started yesterday.
Oh, so I saw that. That's doing really well.
Art Baltazar and Franco, who did 50 issues of Tiny Titans and sadly only 12 issues of Superman Family Adventures for DC most recently. And right after it was announced that comic was ending, Just a few days later, they announced their Aw Yeah Comics Kickstarter. So they're creating their own characters. But it looks like it's very much in the style of those previous offerings that they had. So they are committing to doing 6 issues of this, and they've already met their goal. They said if we get $15,000,
yeah,
we're doing within less than a day they met it. And so now they're saying if we get $30,000, we're doing 12 issues of this. And for your support on that, you will get either digital or print copies of this comic. So look at it as pre-ordering if you'd like for that. Those are some of my favorite comics that have come out from the big guys in the last several years. Just fun.
Superman family stuff?
Yeah. And
yeah.
If you like your superhero comics full of fun... there we go.
Here, let's see if we can turn it around and we can show it on the camera.
I can zoom in here. Well.
Oh, no!
If we can spin it around, there we go.
If everyone stands on their heads, they can see it.
So, yes, Art Balthazar... Need we say more? But yeah, if you're a fan of superheroes, but fun superheroes, right?
Yeah, and so I think it's worth supporting. I put my money where my mouth was on that. And we didn't talk much about Kickstarter as a way of funding your...
That was on my list. So, Spike, I implore you to come back to talk about Kickstarter.
I would love to.
Yeah, okay. We could do a whole show on Kickstarter.
So. Yeah, we definitely... And as well as Lorianne, I mean, because she's doing a talk at the library next month.
March 3. Yeah, Lorianne's going to talk about her experience with Kickstarter. So, definitely.
A whole podcast about Kickstarter, a whole broadcast about Kickstarter sounds like a great idea, and I'm totally down if you'll have me.
Awesome. Okay. Well, then my people will call your people, and my poor people will call your poor people. In other words, I will email you. But thank you, Spike, for this. This was an awesome episode. Thank you, Dave.
Oh, man. Thanks for having me.
And everybody should come out to Mini Comics Day in March. I will be there. You'll have a chance to hang out with me if Dave isn't enough. and then thank you, Sharon, for showing up. And thank you to Lorianne. Thanks to Matt Dubay in the control room for putting this show together every 2 weeks. I know I'm prematurely aging the man, and I appreciate the years that I'm sucking out of your life putting this show on. Thanks to Eric Closer in the chat. He's been in the chat client the whole time. Webchat.freenode.net, the channel hashtag CAG, posting links to everything we've been talking about for all the folks. Cool. Thanks to everybody who showed up in the chat. Diana Nock was in there, and Scott Yoshinaga, John O'Ballier, and a whole mess more. This show will be archived at comicsaregreat.com/CAG72, and you can follow us on YouTube at comicsaregreat.tv, and you can read Sharon's excellent book reviews on comics.aadl.org. Until next time, everybody, I have been Jersey Drozd of comicsaregreat.com and Jersey on the Twitters. Okay, bye.